This program has been sponsored by Portal to Ascension, portaltoascension.com. Welcome to New Realities. I'm Alan Steinfeld. This program is about the evolution of consciousness, who we are becoming as we unfold a greater awareness. And that is why I'm talking today to Jonathan Van Valen, who has a very interesting approach to becoming more aware, awake, conscious, and you have a great story, Jonathan. We can go into this, some of the story, but before the show, we're just trying to figure out how to describe what you do. And I would say that you give people a deeper presence of mind. Would that be something you would agree with?
I think the way that I've come up with is to say that it's often true that there's been a way in which been able to help people remove the blocks to their own experience of their deepest being and to live from the peace that can pour forth from there. And the difficulty with describing that for me is primarily in the aspect of the I, because even though that's what I said I just did with people, the core of that experience on my side of it is that I don't actually do anything. And we can talk more about that, perhaps.
When you say I don't do anything, you mean
yes.
I, as a personality, doesn't do anything, right?
Yes. I mean, this character of Jonathan is not a party to that event. Jonathan as an I is not a causative factor. And I mean that very, very literally.
But something greater than Jonathan is doing something, right? It's something beyond you, but it happens through you.
That's about the closest we seem to be able to come, is that there is that phrase that is often used, which is that one can be a vessel for consciousness or a vessel for the divine, seems to come much, much closer to the truth of it.
So you feel, though, as if you are a vessel for the divine, right? That's what you, I mean, everybody is, of course, but you are more in touch with that.
Yes, that's true.
You're more in touch with that.
To me, that connection with that divinity, or that connection with that oneness, if you will, that is something that feels really more palpable and in a sense more real to me than really just about anything else, including even the sort of the phenomenal world around us. It's an aspect of being that I don't feel ever apart from. It's one of those aspects of experience that can be a little hard to put into words. It's that, you know, that part of our experience that we often call spiritual experience, but it's a part that I feel inextricably connected to, honestly, always. There are, you know, sometimes there are times when it's more in the foreground and sometimes when it's more in the background, but it literally feels like it's never gone. It's never not there. And so it's a place that's extremely natural and automatic for me to sort of revel in and come from, especially when it's time to be face-to-face with people, face-to-face with the world in general. So
would you say you're more there when you're just on your own than when you're dealing with people?
I really wouldn't. There's no gate that impedes particularly. I mean, there can be a sort of a conscious movement on my part to go towards it. But there's not really any aspect of this world that can really obscure it unless I sort of allow that to happen. So whether I'm by myself or whether I'm with other people, honestly, it really doesn't matter.
Okay, but you work with people, maybe not get them there, but to bring that state to them, right?
Well, that's often the case, yes. Yeah, people have found their way to me in often funny ways. To me, it's funny. and they've come for all kinds of reasons. When they come, there is essentially a choice on my part that says, yeah, I'm happy and willing to play my part in whatever I can do to be useful. Really, it just comes down to being useful. And that often takes the form of these encounters with people. And what's revealed there is something that is a very, very fundamental or core block in their own connection to this very being that we're talking about. And so that's very often addressed. That can take a vast array of forms. The number of forms that can take is equal to the number of, you know, beings on the planet. From my side of that, it seems like what's offered is the same every single time. But because it's going through the particular filter of this particular other human being, they're going to experience that in ways that are totally unique to them. And it's going to be experienced by them in ways that are acceptable to them, that are meaningful to them, accessible to them. And that's a very, very wide range.
I get that, but maybe it's hard to describe what you do because you're not doing anything, but you are. So when you're sitting with people, did a session with me, I couldn't I felt very peaceful. I felt very relaxed. We did this over Skype and said, I'm going to feel like you're putting your hand on my head. And I said, and I went into a very, maybe I fell asleep or went into an altered state, but it's a very peaceful feeling, yes. Are you holding a different space when you're with people than you are like right now?
No, I'm really not. Not really. There may be, the only thing that's different about right now is that we're just literally engaged in an ordinary conversation also. That same presence or that same being is still just as much fully here. I think one of the interesting facets of what we might call healing in general, in our culture and in our world, we tend to put a great amount of emphasis on the healer. And one of the things that these encounters with people reveal over and over and over and over is how the healing effects that are experienced are more of a product of the limitations of that person's mind than it is of anything else. Not the limitations of the healer so much, but the limitations of the mind. And my favorite analogy for that is a ship comes into a harbor and there's a lighthouse because there's all kinds of pitfalls that, you know, the ship doesn't want to run into. There's trouble ahead in some fashion. When that ship captain sees that lighthouse, they then have, that illumination gives them access to some more knowledge or some new information. And they can choose to accept that information or not. They can do whatever they want. It's a completely free choice situation for them. They can still turn towards the rocks. They can change in that scenario, not the lighthouse. That's essentially how I see healing over and over and over and over and over in people. And I find it beautiful.
You are making them feel more of themselves, not making them, but they are somehow coming to a more of a sense of themselves, would you say?
I think that last statement maybe is closer. In those encounters with me, I very literally, it's easier to describe what I'm not doing. So I'm not looking at them and hoping for them. And I'm not looking at them and thinking, gosh, I hope some of their blocks disappear. I'm not doing that at all. I'm not saying, I hope this light finds them. I'm not wishing or praying. There's no manipulation energy and that sort of thing. There's no attempt to sort of get inside their consciousness and poke around and show them things or something like that. There is honestly none of that, because in those moments, I am essentially disappearing completely my own awareness of sense of an individuated self and just sort of allowing being completely subsumed by that overarching oneness is my favorite word for it. It's sort of like when that lighthouse shines in the harbor. Like, is the lighthouse actively trying to reach out to that ship and make it change course? Absolutely not. The lighthouse really has extraordinarily little to do with it. That other person, it's like when they see that light or when they experience it a little bit themselves, it gives them greater information and greater permission to choose a little differently than they had before. And so they often do. This is often happening on a level that is not even entirely conscious to them, but that's how it appears to me. And so when they choose to sort of align themselves more with that light, then their experience has to reflect that in some way that is understandable to them and meaningful to them and acceptable to them. And that takes such a wide variety of forms. Sometimes it takes the form of some kind of literal physical shift within them, where something that hurt now doesn't hurt or something, you know, or there's literally some kind of healing. Very, very often it's something that is some sort of psycho-spiritual shift within them, some sort of release. And very, very, very often it's experienced a very simple, sweet peace. Very often. It's probably the most common way.
I felt a simple, sweet peace, I guess it would call. But maybe people listening could get more of a sense of it if you tell your story, because you didn't start out doing this. You were pretty regular sort of person, I mean, from what you've said. So what was your journey and how did you discover you could bring or be a part of that peace for somebody?
I am from the Great Pacific Northwest in the city of Seattle, and that's where I still live. I've traveled around a great deal. A lot of my story has involved wandering quite far and wide. And I'm happy to give you all the details that you'd like.
Well, you don't have to give all the details, but just sort of like what got you from sort of being a pretty regular, normal sort of conditioned person like all of us who's not really in touch with their essence or this part, to like discovering that there's this piece.
Let me give it my best shot. And to back up what you just said, yes, there was a regular kid who grew up in the suburbs and went to public school and that sort of thing, and embarking on the usual pathways of adulthood and and really from the very beginning, finding them a little bit suspect. Like, I was never quite sure this was really all it was cracked up to be.
Getting a job, having a family, buying a house.
Yes, I'm afraid so.
Whole thing, there was something missing in that, huh?
And that's not to say, I have the absolutely, and I really mean this, the highest respect for people who are doing those things really beautifully and successfully, because I think that is extraordinary and marvelous. But I also found myself feeling as though that a lot of the sort of underlying beliefs on why those things are the ways things should be, I never felt satisfying to me. So I was always sort of riding on the edge of, why am I doing this? And sort of on a constant search of, there must be something more here that I don't see or don't understand, or I'm not quite getting, because this isn't all entirely making sense to me. And I think that's a feeling a lot of people can relate to. It's the sort of a core kind of seeking that a lot of people can relate to. In my case, that kind of seeking was something that was tremendously internal. It was, you know, in the scope of living this otherwise pretty ordinary life, that kind of seeking was unmentioned by me. It was not something that I shared particularly. I was not part of groups of people that were into seeking things, and I didn't carry a yoga mat, and it was all very internal. And over time, it did become something that quite ferocious, actually.
What part was ferocious?
That a sense of, I can't seem to quite figure out what this is all for. If I had to sort of boil down a question that just burned, it was something like that. Of course, I am skipping a great many details here, but a question like that began to burn so internally, so hot, that I began to just be relinquishing things all around me in favor of trying to figure it out, actually. And eventually my story ended up looking a little, well, like I think probably many stories have, where that internal drive and that internal search led to just getting totally off the map in terms of regular adult life.
What did you start to relinquish? Like, when, where did you go when you say off the map?
Oh, it was a long gradual process. Ultimately, what did I try to, what was being relinquished? Ultimately, what was being relinquished were aspects of the way I thought about the world that kept out turning not to be important or not true. It was, so what I was really relinquishing were the constructs with which I'd been operating in the world, understanding the world. It was as those things would sort of, it's like they would literally pop. and in many cases, these are very mundane things. There was a lot of beliefs about myself. Like, I identified, for instance, as an entrepreneur at one point. I identified myself as a bit of a writer and a bit of a musician. I identified myself as a very busy person, as a reasonably successful person, as a very interesting person. All the things I was involved in and doing and busy with in the world, and just all these ideas that I held about myself and who I was and what I was about. Over time, I kept finding it hard to keep a hold of those things as true and as meaningful. And there were just time would come where I'd think, wow, this stuff that I thought was so important just doesn't seem that important to me anymore. And if it's not that important, it's kind of easy to let it drop. And so it was sort of like large chunks of life kept being sort of dropped or thrown out or just, you know, didn't seem important. And when something's not important, it's very natural to simply set it down and walk away. And there was a way in which that kept happening to a degree that some pretty big chunks of life were starting to fall apart, including the fact, for instance, that I spent 10 years running a small import company, and I had a business partner. And as these things are sort of falling apart within me, my entrepreneurial drive basically fell to zero. and so as those things would fall away, these great fears would come up, like, well, what the hell am I doing? What on earth am I doing here? Because I'm having a hard time explaining to people that I care less and less about these things that I thought were so important. And I can't seem to articulate very well why my feeling has changed about it, but I can't pretend that they are important. That's how clear this is to me. Now this fear has come up, like, well, is that going to wreck my relationship with my business partner? And, you know, yes, it did strain it. What about my livelihood? I mean, it would come down to very basic questions of, frankly, survival. How am I going to support myself? And so on and so forth. Very ordinary adult questions to be asking. And it frankly did at times stress those things out. So as these things fell away, there was a tremendous amount of fears that would crop up in their place. And there was grappling with that fear. But on the other side of it, as they fell away too, there kept being revealed as they fell away that there was a sense of beatific peace that was also coming with their relinquishment. And there was a sweetness to that was so compelling and so sweet that it was impossible not to be oriented towards it. And this is all happening on an internal level that I literally shared with almost no one, and was, you know, it's going on for years as a functioning adult and progressing to this, you know, in a progressive way, such that it just eventually got to a point where it literally felt as though I was having a very difficult time functioning at all in regular life. I felt it impossible to explain myself, since I was surrounded by people that also felt that all these things were meaningful and important, and I couldn't seem to make sense to them. A lot of these things didn't seem important to me. And so it just became so awkward that there came a point where I just had to, like walk away from regular life. And that's exactly what I did. I sold the business to my business partner, and which was not a big deal at all. Got rid of my car, said goodbye to the lovely girlfriend, gave the keys to my home to an acquaintance I barely knew, and just disappeared for months.
And you disappeared. You didn't just those people disappeared.
Yeah.
Where'd you go?
Well, in my case, I went to a tiny little village in the western highlands of Guatemala. Yeah, that's where I ended up.
What was your process then in that village or that time you took for yourself? What was the process?
There was one thing that was very specific, actually. What I did there was, if you were a good Zen Buddhist, you would have called it self-inquiry, kind of on steroids. I hadn't always thought of it in those terms, but what I was doing was I decided I needed to sit down and write, because for me, historically, writing was a way. Whenever I had to write something, it sort of forced me to clarify my thoughts about it a little bit. I mean, like, to put it on paper, there's a certain clarity that it has to come before it can get on the paper. In the years leading up to this, as I kind of just described, life was dominated by this sort of experience of it being a pendulum, and it would be like all these internally, these things are all falling away. Right? And on one hand, I'm just feeling like it's literally terrifying, actually, because my life is falling apart. And there were these huge fears. And then, you know, the pendulum would somehow swing back, and there would be these, it could be moments, it could be hours, it could be days at times, of this just overwhelming peace. And as that pendulum swung, it had two effects. One was that by seeing the extremes on each side, it made each of the extremes seem more crazy. Like, when you're in that peace, it makes the fear seem so distant that you can't even imagine how the fear can even be there. Like, it makes the fear make no sense at all. And when you're on the other side, when that fear, it's like that peace seems so distant that the fear seems horrendous. And so it literally became a maddening experience on this internal level. Ferociousness came to encapsulate trying to resolve this swinging of this pendulum. Like, it literally drove me, just drove me. There came to be this point where it was just impossible not to say, oh my God, this has got to stop. This has to stop. And I will die trying.
How long would the pendulum swing go for? Like, how long would you be in that state? And how long would you come back and say, this is ridiculous?
Man, it was all over the map. It was one of the things that was hard to abide in. It was because it would be so seemingly randomized sometimes. You know, it was one of those things that when you're in that peace, I can very much understand how people in those states are yearning and seeking, like, oh my God, how badly I want to get back to that peacefulness if I'm in that fear. I understand that very intimately. And when you're in that peace, it just seems so hard to imagine the fear. Like, there was things like, well, how do I do that? What do I do? What do I got to do around here? Do I meditate? What do I do? As I alluded to, this is all happening for me in the context of a total lack of any kind of structure. Like, there's no, I'm not part of any group. I don't have, there are no teachers. There's not, I didn't really even have an awareness of much of that. I have certainly since become more aware of that sort of thing by a long shot, but this was not, it was really very solitary. I couldn't make it happen.
But at one point you must have reached a place where it all dropped away, right? I mean, that struggle, it sounds like
yes.
You struck. So what was that moment?
It did.
It just kind of fell apart.
I was in Guatemala. It just so happens. I'd been there for some months. What I think might be curious about it is that people, seekers particularly, often are under the assumption that that moment is always going to come as a revelatory explosion of sorts, or implosion. And that's actually not always the case, and it was not in my case. Like there was a bunch of sort of precursor events that I didn't understand were precursors until I looked back upon them. There was a shift that was profound and that took root over a couple of weeks period. And it wasn't until I sort of looked back over this period of some weeks and I don't know when the line was crossed exactly, but I can look back now and see that it was crossed, and that this has been different and is different. And I'm not quite sure when that border was traversed in these past couple of weeks, but there were some very metaphoric vision things that took place for me, which I'm happy to share if you're interested. And they took place over this sort of successive couple of weeks period.
What kind of things are you talking about when you say metaphoric vision, for example?
Yeah, sure. Fire eventually became a metaphor that I kind of, or an image that I put meaning to, as a lot of people do, and a lot of spiritual literature does as well, actually. And so there was this experience, this internal experience of what you might call a vision, and it was the vision. It was of myself. I was walking through. The entire world had literally caught fire, and was just burning in a conflagration. What was curious about the vision at the time, the experience of it, was that I was just placidly walking through this utterly glowing, burning, flaming landscape. And, trees have fallen in, ashen heaps, and there's homes. And it was like a neighborhood, sort of a sparsely populated neighborhood. The homes are on fire, literally burning up. But the experience of walking through it was just the most beatific peace, that there was not a tragedy here. It was sort of just like walking around going, huh, look at that. And it was notable for the fact that it just was like this incredible piece. And over the next couple of weeks, a version of that vision kept recurring and it sort of had this successive quality to it, because the next time it occurred a few days later, the flames were, I could look down at my own feet, and the flames were like swirling around my feet. And I had not yet caught fire, but were very present. And, and again, the next time it occurs, I can see that like the pant legs have caught on fire and things like that. So, the next time it occurs, my shirt cuffs are on fire and my clothing is starting to be consumed.
A sensation that went along with it, or were you just visually observing it? Was there another kind of sense, feeling?
There was just a feeling of extraordinarily bodily content. Actually, like if you, in a way that was very sweet, I can only relate, when someone's finished their yoga class or something, or they've climbed out of the sauna, or they just feel good physically. They feel good. Nothing particularly overt in that way. Just felt good. And eventually, as you can see where that's going, the last iteration of that vision ever occurring was experiencing my whole body just being utterly, completely engulfed in flame, and like hearing the roar of the flames in my ears. Just this vision of burning, just simply burning up. And again, the thing that was powerful about it was that it was not an experience of trauma. It was an experience of absolutely beatific perfection. There was not the slightest ounce of fear in it in any way whatsoever. There was not any sense of pain or loss or anything of the sort. It was absolutely lovely. And this sort of unfolded over a couple of weeks.
Well, so after the flames consumed you and you were in that space, were you different when you came out the other side of that? Was that the shift?
For me, it was like, I looked back then, a couple of weeks passed from that last iteration of that vision. There was a kind of sitting around, really. I'm still in Guatemala. I've divested myself, completely of every responsibility that I would normally have. And I've been there for months at this point. There was just a looking back over the previous couple of weeks, realizing how intensely that peace had just sort of set in. And here's the thing about peace. it doesn't really shout a lot. It doesn't really yell at you. It's not going to pound you on the head. It's just, and so in a way, it's almost like it can easily kind of just be without, I mean, it sounds funny to say, but it's like it can be without even being afforded a whole lot of attention. And that's how kind of how it was.
But you dropped into a piece. It became more part of your everyday consciousness, is what you're saying, sort of, right?
It absolutely, yeah. I mean, in the years leading up to that, there had been this sort of the swing of this pendulum, and I had visited that piece so many times. But what made this period different was that it was in looking back over these couple of weeks in which one of the main sort of revelations of it was that the pendulum was over. It has permanently, it's gone. There was just an unassailable sense that...
Is that the place you're still in, or did it keep evolving, that place of peace?
That's a really good question. That fundamental piece is the same. Absolutely the same. However, what does evolve is the way it's been expressed through this form. That has evolved.
In what way has it evolved? What has it changed? In what way?
Well, just in very, you know, sort of overt and almost practical terms, one of the things that was true about it is that it was so peaceful that I just felt uncompelled to do just about anything except sit in it for a while. And so for nearly a year and a half, I barely talked, which is a strange thing to do as a, you know, adult in the modern world. I guess it might make sense in a monastery somewhere, but it wasn't long after, in fact, it was very, very soon after all this occurred that I did go back to my home in the United States, in Seattle. And I wasn't sure what I was doing there, to be honest, at the time. You know, in retrospect, I can see I essentially took this retreat home with me, and I really, without, you know, laboring over the details here too much, I spent, you know, the majority of the next year and a half doing extraordinarily little, sitting quietly an extraordinarily large amount of time and hardly talking at all. So that's one way in which this piece was expressed. And eventually that came to its end, and it was like, it's time to move. So I went wandering around. And I mean that quite literally. I wandered around Southeast Asia and Africa for 6 months, and ended up in upstate New York for a year and a half, and wandering around there, and eventually made my way back to Seattle. And very slowly, yes, go ahead.
No, I'm just curious, when you just found out that you could sit with people and sort of transfer this piece, when did you discover that piece, the presence?
There were kind of little markers and little signs of that kind of from the beginning, but I paid very, very little attention to them. And I paid very little attention to them because I wasn't particularly invested in that at all. I mean, it was a lovely thing to witness when it would occur, but there was no investment in it and on my part. And so I mostly didn't pay it much attention. And I also didn't, I mean, I was literally silent for a large amount of time. So it's not like I was out waving my sign or something. Quite the opposite, like really a lot the opposite. So people, that would only happen, you know, some in like curious little circumstances. And eventually it seemed like people sort of came out of the woodwork sometimes looking for me. Even when people did that, I often said very little, you know, revealed next to nothing of my own experience and continued to frankly keep to myself. But there did come a period where after a particularly, I have to say, you know, sort of miraculous experience of my own, it was interesting how from that point forward, there was this internal experience that was very clear that that would crop up sometimes, and it would simply be a case where I could be standing next to someone that was either a good friend or a total stranger or anywhere in between. It didn't really matter. But sometimes there would be this inner prompt, very clear, that would say, you could really be helpful to this person. It was just like an idea. It was like that idea would pop into my head. You could be really helpful to this person. And it would sort of surprise me, because it was one of those things that felt that I didn't manufacture of my own. Except, it felt as though it was received. But you could be very helpful to this person. And that went on for months. And my internal response to that was something like, what? Why? Okay. I mean, okay, that's great and all. I mean, I'm on board with being useful, I guess, in general. what am I supposed to do with it? And over the months, that turned into a little inner guidance that I really was not thrilled with at all, which was, you could be helpful to this person. All you'd have to do is put your hand on their head, to which my internal response was, well, that what? Man, that seems weird. That's super weird.
Wait, before you go there, I'm just curious. Before you go into that whole thing, because that's sort of your work and where we are now, but what was that internal miraculous event that occurred to you, if you want to share that? Because that sounded interesting.
Yeah, I'm happy to share. It was not internal at all, actually, which is why it seems so startling. What it involved a physical healing situation, which was, my sister's home in North Carolina, very early in the morning, I fell down their wooden staircase. I was actually at home by myself at the time. And it turns out what I did was I put a crack in the olecranon bone, which is that's the bumpy bone on your elbow. When you bend your elbow, that's your olecranon. And I put a crack in that bone when I hit the floor there. I also damaged some of the soft tissue in there that surrounds that joint. It was pretty clear that that's what I had just done. They live in a pretty remote area, and I had no intention of. I literally didn't do anything about it. I laid on the floor for 15 minutes, groaning, and then I just got up and went about my day, and honestly ignored it. even though I was pretty sure that I had possibly crack something in there. And the following morning is when I was scheduled to pack up to leave. I'd been there at their home for a month and a half. Ironically, I was to leave because a small group of people had asked me to spiritual seekers had asked me to talk to them, have a gathering and do a talk. Which would mark the second time I'd ever done that. I'd actually completely forgotten about it in the month and a half previously, and was shocked when I got this phone call from them saying, hey, you're coming up on for the thing on February 2nd, aren't you? And I was like, oh, I totally forgot about that. Anyway, when I woke up the following morning, it was really profoundly clear that that arm, there was a break in that bone, a crack. It had responded in every single way. You can kind of see where this story is going already, but it's extremely swollen. It's extremely painful. The range of motion that's in the arm is 10% at most, and it's an extremely painful 10%. I just, for whatever reason, instead of doing anything about it, I thought, well, I think I'm just going to sit quietly for a moment as I got up, and I'm just going to sit with this for a moment. And that's all I did. And in that silence, and that when I say sit, I do mean go internally to that place in which it's so still that even the sense of that individuated self just is, just fades completely. And again, that's a place that's very natural and very automatic for me. And that's essentially where I went, if you will. And all of a sudden, there was this warm feeling that came over that elbow. And it was startling to me enough that I sort of jumped out of that stillness and asked this internal question, which was, what is happening to my elbow? And immediately felt as though there was an answer answer very clearly received, and it was, well, your elbow is healing. And as I received that message, I have to admit, I mean, there was a part of my mind that just was stunned. I mean, I couldn't quite, like, really? What? And so I opened my eyes, and I'm kind of in a state of shock. And I just looked at my own arm, and then I went like this. And I bent my hand to my chest and straightened it out. And it just, you know, I just kind of felt like my mind got blown a little bit, because I don't know how much time elapsed in there. Yeah, it's one of those things that is sort of outside the bounds of time, but it went from extremely painful to not really pain, you know, like mild pain. And it went from 10% range of motion to about 90-95% range of motion, like that. Again, you know, my internal response to that again was some combination of awe and thanks and gratitude. It seemed like, and this has so been true for me so often and for so long, that somehow silence is still the best vessel for holding that beauty somehow. And so I just sat in awe in silence for some time, and then proceeded to go about my day without the slightest inclination to mention any of this to anyone. And that remained true for quite some time. It also meant, I noted quickly that what it also meant was that on the 12-hour drive I had ahead of me, that my arm had just been repaired enough to use both hands. And I was very, very, very grateful for that. I could now drive very safely. It was, you know, the middle of the winter, snowy. And I was going to be able to make it back to this gathering that I had been asked to speak at much more easily, frankly. And so I just, that was a thing, and I never mentioned it until a couple of months later. I'm going to skip a few details, but there is, it was though that healed mostly, but not 100%. So over the succeeding weeks, there was still some, it was like the soft tissue that was a little wonky. And it kind of remained that way. And so eventually I ended up talking to someone that was a physical therapist, and they said, well, you know, you may want to do something about this, but first go to the doctors, and because we can't really do anything until they do an x-ray. I mentioned that only because I went and got the x-ray. The physician's assistant came out, and without any prompting from me, and again, I've not told the story literally to anyone at this point. The PA comes out and says, well, it looks like you've got a heat in your elbow. And I, you know, look back at her and I said, yeah, it's, I do. that resulted in, a course of a little bit of physical therapy to wind up the healing on the soft tissue in there that hadn't, you know, been quite complete.
A heat fracture? Is that what you said they said it was?
She said, I see that you have a healed fracture. Like, she could see that there was a fracture that had healed. Like, and it was the very first, it's kind of a fun detail, just because it showed even to me that it was actually absolutely legitimate that it was in fact a cracked bone to begin with. And regardless of what anyone wants to make out of what happened next, I can only describe my experience of it. People could view this in very many different ways, of course. But to me, I just simply had no explanation other than this is how miracles occur.
From that experience, you dropped into a deeper place and you realized this presence was sort of a healing presence as well as just a peaceful presence.
It wasn't what I would call a deeper dimension opening. It was simply that from that day forward, that prompt began to appear in my head of, you know, I'd be standing next to some stranger and it'd be like, you could be helpful to this person. And then in that, you know, over the months, that that's when that prompt began, was like, and I, what makes sense to me about that is that there's a way in which, in many dimensions, as humans and brethren with each other, we cannot give what we don't have. And so there was a way in which it was sort of like, you know, the divine saying, listen, here is a healing instance, and a spectacular one. You cannot deny this one, Jonathan, no matter how hard you tried. So it cannot be more clear to you that this is something that you've been given. And in a way, then, to me, it makes a beautiful poetic sense then that that's when that internal prompt to be more genuinely and actively useful to others began as well. Like, here's something you've been given. Now we're going to show you how to use it. Something like that.
Now people come to you and they sit with you and you get the prompt to put your hand on their head and they have an experience. Do you think this is going to develop further?
Whether it sort of develops further or not is not my concern, actually. It is as much up to the divine as all the rest of this is. I'm perfectly content with that. I really mean perfectly content with that. From my perspective, the offering that comes through that is the same offering. It is the same offering. It has always been maximal, essentially. What is a far greater determinant of what happens is the mind of the other ship's captain. It is the way in which that offering moves through somebody else's being and the limitations that they have brought with their own being. I have really little to say about it other than it is to witness as the divine works with the divine and that sort of thing.
Could you do it now on this, and maybe people listening would get it or not get it, but is that possible? You want to just do it now?
Yes.
Okay.
Sure. So I would invite anyone who might be listening to this to themselves sit comfortably or be as comfortable as they can. I would invite them to be as quiet as they can, to just gently relax. Let there be no requirements, really. This is an act of frankly trying less hard than trying more hard. So. To just quiet down and relax for a moment. We'll have literally about a minute of restful silence and presence. And we will do that in 3, 2, 1. Let's go. Sometimes a minute seems like it goes by very quickly.
Yeah, that was nice. I felt a settling, like I would call it a heaviness in a good way. Like I sense my body being in to a denser space almost, but peaceful. But I felt the shift for sure. Yes. When you said 1, 2, 3, were you then, what did you do on 3 that you weren't doing before you got to 1, 2, 3?
I wasn't doing much. That was really just a cue to other people's minds. That's really all that was. And that's, in a way, as a cue to somebody else's mind, it's the same with putting a hand on somebody's head. It's like that's an external cue, an external act that gives their consciousness, in a way. It's like giving them permission to have an experience or to be prepared for something to take place within them. And there's something about that that's often very helpful. It is not strictly necessary to put a hand on someone's head for these kinds of experiences to occur, as we just demonstrated perhaps here. It can be a helpful cue though.
So when this interview finishes, you go back to yourself. Do you have like normal thoughts, or are you more at the place of peace without thoughts?
It's frankly both. I mean, there's this is, you know, this is still a human body. I'm a middle-aged guy living in the city. So I do in fact put pants on one leg at a time. I go grocery shopping and I stare at the shelves and pick what I want and think about dinner. But it's also, there's a navigating of all the regular ordinary life things with more of a sense of flow and more of a sense of peace, and ease than there ever was in the past.
Well, can you talk about that? When you see people, what happens in those cases?
Well, usually when someone comes in person, solo, it just depends upon what their mode is. They generally come in two flavors. One kind of person typically has a clear agenda. They want to learn something, or they want to fix something. Like maybe they have a particular ailment and they're wanting relief from it. Or they've got some kind of spiritual, psycho-spiritual thing going on that they're wanting to address in some way. They want to tell me about it. They want me to fix it. They want to tell me their story as it relates to that thing. And so they really want to talk. And I often sit and listen first, not always, but that's often appropriate. The other kind of person frequently comes and is inclined not to say much of anything. They, you know, perhaps in part because they want to just see what, sometimes it's a bit of a test. Like there's a part of them going, I want to see if this guy is for real, or, you know, I'm going to let him figure it out or something like that. Or sometimes they, is more common than you think, but a lot of times people come not really knowing why. They just would say something like, you know, I just feel like I felt compelled to come. And so they don't really feel like they have a story that they need to tell. And so they're very quiet. Either one is, any of those are fine with me. It doesn't really matter to me at all. It doesn't really matter why someone has come. Whether we talk a little bit first or not, we're still eventually going to take a moment and quiet down and have a little silence. And I will very likely ask them if it's all right to put a hand on their head or something like that, as long as they're, you know, find out if they're actually comfortable with that. And there's been a few cases where they said no thank you, which is perfectly fine with me too. And we're just going to have an encounter where I, you know, as I've sort of attempted to describe, I'm going to go into that stillness that is devoid of even a sense of self. And, you know, another way of describing kind of how that is from my experience of it, is it's sort of like settling into that divine oneness and seeing that divinity is absolutely the same here as it is there in that other person, seeing that there is no difference, that there is no separation in them at all, that they are, not that they are aspects of the same thing, not that they are two sides of the same coin, but they are literally the same one. And somehow simply recognizing that. And you know, curiously enough, quite often, not always, but quite often, out of that stillness also will come intuitive information, metaphoric imagery sometimes, occasionally messages, that sort of thing. It's usually either something of a window into their experience in this moment, like how are they experiencing this stillness, is a common way that that will come. The other is that there will be some usually metaphoric representation or information about what is blocking their own connection to this divinity, to this stillness. And that can be very interesting to them. So we'll often end up talking about that. And that ends up being part of their healing experience.
Right. And then people leave your sessions generally feeling that peace, or maybe even healed, or more relaxed.
Yeah, that is such a wide gamut of things. But yeah, sometimes they experience some kind of physical shift that is a relief for them. Very often something that's sort of in that psycho-spiritual domain of release, and that a feeling of really of peace and stillness that's frequently quite unusual. To a depth that is unusual for them is something that they very often experience.
People find you then. Do you have a website?
I do. Yes, I have a website at jonathanvanvalin.com.
And VanValin, two words. Jonathan Van Valen. Well, I feel pretty good. Do you feel like...
Excellent. Right on.
Do you feel anything like you need to say? I mean, I appreciate you sharing the story. It is unusual. I think it may be a teaching for some people. What are you feeling?
That jumps to mind for whatever reason right now is that one of the things that strikes me as a core aspect of seeking and what people often refer to as the spiritual experience, happy to equate with simply being the human experience, is that experience of moving along the sort of spiritual ladder is ultimately one of demolition. That it's an act of demolition. Yes, it ends up showing itself to be the removal of blocks, and that's what I mean by demolition. It's the removal of the blocks to the divinity that is innately and inherently there. That constitutes what we might call spiritual growth or progress. It's not really, in the end, so much about acquisition, whether it be of learning, acquisition of good karma and things like that. It is more an act of demolition than anything else. And that's why, in the end, it is a great honor for me. I feel extremely blessed and extremely honored to be a witness oftentimes to people's act of, the act of their own demolition project.
That's being demolished, right? The patterns of...
Yes, that's a good way of putting it. Yes.
Yeah, I'm sure everyone could benefit from that, even though they come to it screaming and kicking and all that, right?
Yes, often, yes. Yeah, it's essentially the demolition of the constructs that they've held, of things that they've believed to be true. And that goes as far as even the ego itself being true. That in the end, even that will show itself to be not as true as people thought. And because of that, not as powerful as they thought. This, I say it's an act of demolition But that demolition generally happens like this.
Blow it away, right? That's like, it's just...
It's gone. It is the passing of the most gossamer veil.
But people hold on to that so tightly because they've identified with that and they don't realize...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. There we have the human condition in all of its glory.
So it's that easy and that simple, and yet the world is full of problems because people refuse to go there.
Essentially, yes. I don't mean to say that what is simple is always easy for people. Clearly, they experience it as being very difficult, but it does not in the end change the fact that it is actually simple. It is, in fact, simple, and that is one of its beauties. If something is one, it cannot possibly be complicated.
Well, I appreciate that little piece. I know that's something I'm working with and people I know are working with. And the way you say it, it is
Amen.
Simple and easy. So why not? Why not? What are people holding on to? Except their pride, their insecurity, their... fear of shame.
A million things.
Whatever it is, it doesn't matter. But
I suppose one other way of summing up or encapsulating what I do with people is being that guy who just shows up sometimes to say, "Hey, why not?"
Do you come up against anything yourself? I mean, does that ever get caught in your system, or are you kind of clear?
Well, about all I can say about that is that from that sort of pre-awakening period, that clarity is deeper and more present than it ever was before. The depth of in the clarity seem permanent, and they seem unassailable. And that is still happening here this human form, and I'm still a human, and the fact is that you cannot actually operate in this dimension at all without some shred of ego. It is literally impossible to function. So is there some kind of function of ego in here? There has to be. Nobody gets to be on this planet in this dimension at all, unless there is some shred of that, which is a long way of saying nobody's perfect. Nobody's perfect.
Right, you're aware of where your ego is present.
I'm certainly much more aware than I ever used to be. So in the instances in which maybe some tick of ego shows itself, it's certainly far more likely to be recognized. It's far more likely to be forgiven. It's far more likely to be navigated with a kind of grace that I didn't always wasn't always able to bring to it. Nobody gets to be on this planet without also being human. That's just how this dimension is set up. While it's wonderful that the divine can move through this world in so vastly many ways, and many of those ways can be wonderful and helpful, and none of them are perfect. Not a single one.
Well, that's good. That's honest. And it gives us energy to keep moving. Thank you, Jonathan, for your time.
You're very welcome. It's a pleasure. This is a total joy. It is a total joy to be able to share this. Share it with you. And an honor and a joy to share it in general. So to that, I say thank you very much.
And I'm Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. Thanks for watching. Thank you all. Good night. This program has been sponsored by Portal to Ascension, portaltoascension.com.
We're going to have the Portal to Ascension conference October 5th, 6th, and 7th, 2018, this year, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. 3 days, epic presenters, Billy Carson, Alan Steinfeld, Robert Schock, Trisha McKinnon, John D'Souza, Ray Hernandez, Paula Harris, Teresa Yanaros, Justin DeChamps, Jordan Sather, and the list goes on. We have like another 10 to 12 other presenters, sound healers, musicians, right across the street from John Wayne Airport in Irvine, California. October 5th, 6th, and 7th. Portal to Ascension, we've been doing events for 10 years. This is going to be close to our 1,000th event production, the biggest event we've ever done, right in the heart of conservative Orange County, here to spread awareness and awaken the masses.